Cape Talk.
Health and wellness.
All jokes aside, Dr. Darren Green, you were just telling me in the break about a patient who came in with road rage complications.
Unbelievable how powerful the emotions and all that workup can actually have such a dramatic effect on your health. And this one specific patient thought he was having a heart attack. A youngster, you know, but just couldn't control those impulses of getting more and more angry and not being able to vent his anger while driving. And he's, you know, his poor mom, who was considerably older, obviously had to endure all this and came in just as traumatized. And obviously we were concerned that his blood pressure shot up and his heart could have been affected as well. So certainly dramatic effects.
Okay, so if you can't think of it from the perspective of being empathetic to the other people on the road with you, be selfish and think about your own health and take a deep breath.
Exactly.
Is the message. Okay.
What's up?
We're not actually talking about the stress-induced disorders. We're talking about prostate cancer today, and there's a reason we're doing that, because September is actually Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. And if you are round and about town, you might have noticed a call going out or seen posters advertising something called Suit Up September, which is an annual awareness campaign. And it's a very simple idea, as you do for many of these campaigns. You pay your money, you buy a sticker, and that sticker gives you permission to wear a suit on the 27th of September to help raise awareness and obviously raise some funds for prostate cancer. And whether that is a formal work suit or a superhero suit, I'm thinking of coming to work in my birthday suit just to see what happens, Darren, on the 27th of September is the day to do it. All jokes aside, it's one of the leading cancers in South Africa, particularly for men.
Indeed, and it certainly is a slowly growing and a slowly progressive cancer, which makes the screening process so important. And obviously we deal with all these stigmas around the diagnosis and the biopsying and so forth. Mm. And I think people are just so afraid because they don't know what to expect. So hopefully we can, we can debunk some of the myths around the whole prostate examination and so forth.
Well, let's just dive straight in there, because I'm guessing that we might not have as many calls as normal, Darren, because it's that old ostrich head in the sand. You know? We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to think about it. Hmm. A doctor tells you should start having your prostate checked from what age?
Yeah, so generally we advise from the age of 40 onwards, although you can develop symptoms where you would need to have your prostate checked earlier than that.
For example?
And why it's important, the LUTS symptoms. So we call them LUTS, lower urinary tract symptoms. And that's when you have a change in the flow, the strength of that flow. When you actually urinate, you need to stand closer and closer to the, the urinal, to the toilet. Remember that that flow is an indication of the patency, the urogenital tract, whether that pipe is open. And one of the urethra that runs through the prostate itself can be affected due to the prostate enlarging and actually obstructing and pressing that urethra closed. So the flow, the stream's affected. You also then have things like urgency, where you feel you have a massive amount of urine to pass. You go to the toilet and there are a few drops. You also can't cut off the stream as quickly as you normally do, and you have what's called dribbling. Very unpleasant, because obviously your underwear gets wet and causes a whole lot of other problems with that, and more uncomfortable even socially. So yeah, those are real symptoms that shouldn't be ignored. So even if you're younger than 40 and you start developing some of those symptoms, then you should see your urologist and have your urine checked and so forth. Remember, everything that involves the lower urinary tract isn't prostate cancer. You could have an infection of the prostate that makes it enlarge and cause a little bit of partial obstruction. Mm-hmm. You could also have trauma to it in exercise, etc. as well. But and then obviously the pre-runners sometimes of cancer is a condition called BPH, benign prostate hyperplasia, which is where the cells themselves basically are increased in size and they enlarge. And that's not cancerous. That's a benign condition, as the name suggests. And that's a treatable condition as well. You might just require more rigorous follow-up for that. And also medical treatment of that can help quite a bit. Yep.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about that screening process. So from age 40, should you have it done once a year?
Yeah. So we recommend, obviously, that the initial one is a test, just a blood test first. Mm-hmm. And the blood test is a hormone or a chemical we test for in the blood called PSA, the prostate specific antigen. We have values that guide us in terms of when they're too high or moderately high or severely elevated. And I mentioned even as something as simple as the digital examination, where we actually feel the size of the prostate, the contour, the consistency, whether it's hard, soft, this, you know, whether it's a walnut size or whether it's a golf ball size, mm-hmm. all significant in our workup. But in terms of specifically the prostate-specific antigen, trauma can cause the blood level to go up, digital examination, infection as mm-hmm. well can also cause it to go up, and then of course hyperplasia that I mentioned, and then obviously cancer itself. So what would be important obviously is looking at the reversible treatable causes and looking at whether that level comes down or not, and whether it comes down sufficiently over time to decide whether we need to take a closer look with more invasive testing and things mm-hmm. like a sonar directed biopsy of the prostate. Nowadays we even use MRI, which is magnetic resonance imaging, which is a much more detailed look around the soft tissue and the gland itself, gives you signal change in the prostate, which could indicate mm-hmm. a diseased area.
Okay.
And then you can direct a biopsy at that, obviously, and have a look at what you yield.
Dudley in Bloberg Stand, I'll get your call in just a moment. A reminder, if you've got a question or a comment, you can call in on 021-446-0567. Just before we go to Dudley, though, yes. what I haven't asked you is the role of the prostate. What's it actually doing in the body?
Yeah, so it doesn't make sperm cells. That happens in the testes, and mm-hmm. the testicles under the influence of hormones that are secreted from the brain all the way through that hypothalamus axis. And that is the target organ, the testes that makes it. The prostate actually is involved with making the fluid that houses the sperm cells and nourishes it and so forth, and gives it obviously the viscosity and the you know the nature of it being watery. So it's the fluid that embeds the sperm cells.
Okay, thanks for explaining that. Dudley, thank you for holding. Good afternoon.
Hello, Papa, and hello to your guests. In actual fact, I've just come back from a new from a prostate check and all the rest of it. I feel very used because I got the digital examination without being taken to lunch, which I thought was extremely, extremely callous.
But how rude,
anyway,
how
I, my prostate, oh, my prostate is a size 60, and apparently there's no danger size related to the size of your prostate. So in actual fact,
yes.
What is the dangers regarding an enlarged prostate where, in actual fact, you have to undergo an operation to solve it?
Yes, and a great question. So not all prostates need to be biopsied. The size is basically related to the amount of cells in a specific area, and we count the amount of cells in a specific it's called a nanogram that is used per gram. So weight of the prostate is related to the size and the amount of cells in that specific area. What is more important is to actually, when you have prolonged symptoms that are not symptoms that I mentioned early on of the lower urinary tract, the LUTS symptoms, and you're not getting any joy with the reversible treatable causes of those things, to have it further investigated. So if you'd notice a change in the ratios of those cells, rapid growth of those cells, rapid growth in the size of them, one would then obviously advise a biopsy of the prostate as well. And that is where obviously the rigorous follow-up is important. Everyone that has a prostate that big might have no symptoms at all. It might not affect your day-to-day functioning or your flow or all the other symptoms I've mentioned. And in that case, you would leave it. Watchful waiting is what we call it. And then follow up at the indicated time. Your age is a risk factor. Specifically, you should understand that after the age of 40, your risk increases all the way up to 70, you know, with each year that you age. So that's why you'd need more frequent follow-ups after the age of 50.
Dudley, thank I hope you buy yourself some lunch as a reward for doing the right
indeed.
Thing.
Indeed.
well, Papa, I'm going overseas, and you know when you have to organize your overseas trip surrounding like the availability of cloakrooms, then you really know you've got a problem.
Okay, Dudley, bon voyage as well. And lunch is from Dudley to Dudley, I think is the correct saying here. Well done too to Vic, who's emailed saying, I have my digital exam every 2 years. It gives me peace of mind, as they also do an ultrasound of some of your other organs as well. And I always tell myself that small amount of discomfort is a lot less for me than it is for the doctor who's doing the exam.
Yes, and you have to really try and explain explain what you're doing to the to the patient and make them understand that it's not going to be a painful test at all, and run them through it, you know, and then give them a chance to ask questions before you do the test, not after you've done the test, and then of course allow feedback afterwards. I think that's important, but understand the importance of taking ownership of that screening, because it's a fully treatable cancer if detected in the early stages.
Yeah.
And luckily, you know, with our technology and breakthroughs and treatment options, there's a lot we can do about it.
Okay. We're going to just break away from prostates for a moment, back to road rage, because I have Sean on the line, I think, wanting some advice on that. Sean, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Doctor, I don't have road rage, but I had a frontal lobe brain injury.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I suffer with the symptom of road rage or the similar thing, and I need to know, like, I'm seeing a psychologist and stuff like that.
Good.
But it's like, it's helping and stuff like that. I was going to say that, but nothing is there. I need to know some advice for that, please, just to...
Thank you for calling
in. Relax and breathe and stuff, you know, because, like, it's actually... pissing off, no?
It's a lot harder than that.
Sean, thanks for being brave enough to call in as well. Yeah. Great. And, what advice would you share, Sean?
So he depicts the frontal lobe syndrome, which is typically after having an injury to the frontal lobe of the brain, you could have mood changes, mm-hmm. personality changes certainly as well, where you have impulse control issues, where your fuse, in other words, is a lot shorter. The handbrake to decide which is what is appropriate for specific situations might be affected, and almost a little bit of blunting regarding the appropriateness of when to pull up that handbrake and, you know, exercise good judgment calls. And so that's the difficult part of the condition that he has at the moment. Behavior modification is basically through support structures, through going through the psychology sessions that he's putting a lot of time into. He'll have to learn strategies in terms of cognitions, how to work on his thoughts when he feels the need to act out and vent and become physically, destructive. And then, of course, obviously medication as well. The problem with a lot of the medication with mood and impulse control is a lot of it obviously sedates you and keeps you subdued. Mm. And then you obviously also run the risk of subduing your personality quite a bit. So you've got to look at the risk-benefit ratios of when and how to treat someone that's had a frontal lobe injury. The hardest part is for the loved ones and people that live with you and around you, that knew you before the injury or the stroke or the brain hemorrhage, and now have to deal with the changes in your persona.
Mm.
So really, really tough. I think mindfulness and silencing his mind is something that he might look into, and a technique called MBSR, mind-body stress reduction, that teaches you how to slow down and focus on one thing and discipline your mind into really relaxing and that kind of thing, might be something he can start looking into as well.
Oh, sounds like something I could use as well, quite frankly.
We all could.
Okay. Thanks, Sean, and good luck to you. Really, really good. Thanks for your call. Andre's taking us back to the prostate. Andre's on the line from Paro. Afternoon, Andre.
Yeah, afternoon, Papa and your guest. I'm an ex-clinician, ex-clinician. I used to practice medicine.
Yes.
But just on the digital examination,
yes.
What I've discovered over the years is that men has experienced the digital examination either as very painful or very pleasurable. It all depends on how it is done by the clinician. And I remember when I was at medical school, we were taught how to do this. And thinking back now, when we were taught, I can understand the reasoning. So it depends on what the doctor does. If the doctor is simply going to push his finger up the anus of the patient, it's going to be extremely painful because he the sphincter is closed and he is basically pushing the anal sphincter open so that his finger can go in, and that's painful. On the other hand, if he examines the patient and puts his finger on the anus and asks the patient to push down as if he's sitting on the toilet, that opens the sphincter and it's easy to slip in the finger and it's less or no painful. So that's what I've experienced over the years, and it's more an issue for the doctors. Well, obviously the patient experiences the pain, but it's more an issue for the doctor who practices the digital examination.
Andre, that's really informative. Thank you for the call, and it goes back to what you were saying, Darren, about the need to communicate with your patient, to let the patient ask questions beforehand, to talk them through the process. That it doesn't need to be this very intimidating invasive experience.
Yeah, and also, you know, often you have patients that you can discuss the options with. Not every patient wants to have the digital prostate check done. So we obviously use things like sonar, MRI, and the blood test or the serum test for the PSA. And, you know, those are very, very useful tests that in the absence of obviously clear clinical abnormalities are very good at screening. So, you know, the question is just, you know, how much of a influence and impact does the digital examination have above all those others in terms of picking up and detecting prostate cancer?
Mm.
And certainly the other tests are just as justified. So that's what we need to take home from this.
When tests are justified, I trust medical aides pay for them. How well covered is the screening process?
Yeah, so that's very important. So some of the medical aids actually endorse you going for your screening test and give you, obviously, reward systems to get you screened for ladies, for cervical cancer, and for men also in prostate cancer as well. I think those incentivized programs are good, but I think more importantly, we should start making it a community male bonding thing where, for example, a father can relay that message to his son, where the 65-year-old granddad and his son at the age of 40 and their youngster should, you know, they should all be involved in understanding the dialogue around these things and why we go for. They should be part of family conversations regarding taking ownership. We encourage ladies to examine the breasts and look for breast lumps, etc. But men in general really need to take ownership of their health and also display a little bit more interest in preventative conditions.
Mm, very important message. Thank you. Brian is on the line from Hermanus wanting to ask, I think, about new tests. Brian, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, Pippa.
Hi, Brian.
Although we know the PSA test has, shall we say, transformed the landscape of early detection of prostate cancer, it, as you well know, has its downsides. And as you're also probably aware, there are new tests now which have been developed which are far more discriminatory. I'm thinking specifically of the ISO-PSA test and the ability to distinguish between BPH and possibly a potentially malignant transformation could be detected using such a test. I'm wondering whether the path labs here in South Africa are likely to introduce those sooner rather than later.
Yes, and certainly, definitely, the urologists in private practice certainly are very aware of that in terms of it being a more accurate indicator. We have the same phenomenon when we're also looking at specific sub-enzyme groups, chemical substances that we basically test for when looking at damage to heart muscle cells as well in the acute versus the subacute stages. The same applies for the prostate. What's important to note, however, is not everyone that has BPH or benign prostate hyperplasia has the ability to go on and develop prostate cancer. So often someone would have BPH with an enlarged prostate where we don't actually know why. The prostate can be treated with alpha reductase or alpha blockers, you know, we can reduce the size of the prostate to increase the flow and improve the symptoms. But that hyperplasia doesn't go away completely and it can recur. So the PSA levels might come down, for example, from 9 to 3 and so forth, but will have the ability to fluctuate and go up again. So a lot of work is being done to look at what are the determining factors as to which people have the ability to move on from BPH into prostate cancer itself. What are the other risk factors involved? And one of the big ones that are involved is a sedentary lifestyle and lack of exercise. There is now clear evidence that your lifestyle impact and the exercise actually has a direct bearing on that transition. So that's very exciting news in terms of preventing cancer. So sedentary lifestyle certainly can contribute to an increased risk of you developing prostate cancer.
Well, it's a great way to end the segment, and Lionel has just SMS'd asking what can one do to prevent prostate cancer, if anything. So you've said lifestyle, worker, be active, obviously don't smoke.
What eat else correctly, would you advise? You know, obviously smoking is a big risk factor. Alcohol has been proven as well to have an increased risk of developing prostate cancer as well. And breast cancer, by the way, for those that didn't know. So smoking, alcohol, lifestyle in terms of exercise, those are things that are now no longer debatable, but proven. And then obviously the early screening. So if you know the symptoms of an enlarged prostate, you understand its function. You'll be able to recognize the symptoms and say, whoa, this is going on. This has happened for the past week. I should have it checked out. Mm. And start off by excluding something simple like an infection. It's a simple urine test. See your GP, and then they will appropriately refer you on for more detailed testing if needed.
Darren, thanks as always for a very informative session.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. Thanks, and we'll see
so
you
much.
In a suit on the 27th of September. Okay.
Indeed.
Remember, the 27th of September is Suit Up September Day. The stickers cost 20 Rand. If you'd like to know more about that campaign, if you'd like to know more about prostate cancer, about advances in treatment, etc., we'd like to direct you to the fact that there is, in fact, a Prostate Cancer Foundation, and you can visit their website, which is www.prostate-ca.co.za, or look for them on Facebook and Instagram. Prostate Cancer SA is what you should be searching.